This episode is brought to you by the Pelora Group.
Welcome back to Winning Through Culture.
I'm Tim Flanagan.
And I'm Amanda Kramer.
When culture's not a priority, people aren't a priority. Having an intentional focus helps you as a leader remain impactful and relevant as you move your business forward.
Welcome to Winning Through Culture.
Welcome back to another episode of Winning Through Culture. I am very excited to be here today with Kristen Hall Askew. She is the Vice President of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging at One Digital. They are a leading insurance, financial services, and HR consulting firm in the region here in the Carolinas. In her role, which we'll talk a little bit about today, she drives One Digital's national DEI&B strategy and serves as an extension to their mergers and acquisitions team. She's got a great background. You're involved in some wonderful nonprofits. So thank you for being with us today, Kristen.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
It is great to have you here. I'm excited to have you here. When we were putting together this series on women in leadership, you were very high on my list of people I was hoping we could get as a guest.
Well, I am
so
flattered.
Thank you. Why don't you tell us, before we get started, just a little bit about your professional journey and how you came into the role you're in today?
Absolutely. It's interesting. I usually answer this question by saying I'm just a brown girl raised in the South who is a creative and somehow landed in finance and insurance and now diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. But I really consider my first true career move, not just a job, to be with Consolidated Planning, right, under the Guardian Insurance House. And there, I mean, I started in a super paper pushy role. I'm building cases. I'm learning the biz. At some point, we opened a subsidiary that was super next gen focused, and I had the opportunity to serve as a leader there. And then pre-2020, I say that because post the murder of George Floyd, a lot of people really started to put their foot on the gas in terms of DEI&B. But we were doing the work, you know, finding our way before that. And I had the opportunity to spearhead that. And as they say, your network is your net worth. I knew somebody who worked at One Digital. They'd been courting me for a while. The timing was right. And I've been there for a couple of years and created every role I've had. And I'm enjoying the ride.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what drew you into the DEI&B space? Was it the situation with George Floyd, kind of a passion prior to that?
I think it goes back to being that brown girl raised in the South. I mean, I think about our industry actually coming in your building, which is beautiful, by the way, no shade here, but I had a little bit of deja vu. I remember interviewing at, you know, my last employer, CP, and it is a space that looks like it's made for a certain group of people, right? There's gold and mahogany and the hunting dogs and all of those things. And had a lot of experiences being the only, I've had a lot of experience where racism flat out was involved. And I feel like the onus is on me to pass the torch. You know, I feel like my family and everyone who came before me kept their head down so I could keep my head up. Mm-hmm. And as I kind of delved into the world of DEI&B, I learned about lots of different things. And so it's expanded. Clearly, diversity is much more than color. I think in the South, we often talk about that, but it's passion work. It's hard work. It's beautiful too.
Yeah. No, well, it's impactful and meaningful work.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, for sure. So this series is really about women in leadership and culture building women, and I certainly consider you to be one of those. What are some of the trends that you're seeing with women leaders in a variety of industries, knowing that you've been in the financial services field for a while now, but across the board, what are you seeing, Kristen?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to start this by talking about some of the things that we probably all already know. It's not so much a trend, but women are rock stars when it comes to building teams, collaboration, communications, being mentors. And this isn't just a matter of my opinion. This is data-driven.
Yep.
But I do think that in today's world, especially with, you know, we saw so many women leave the workforce in 2020, we're seeing some of those skills be utilized at a higher degree, but not quite where it should be, right? Mm-hmm. Representation is certainly still lacking across industries, across titles. And again, this is my own little lens. You know, I work for a company that is predominantly female. I'm seeing more femininity at the table. And I say that realizing that means something different to everybody else.
Yeah, well, because this theme has come up in this series. So what, when you say that, I think I know what you mean, but what are you referring to specifically in that regard?
Well, I'm thinking about women in general having a seat at the table. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying there's enough, but I am saying that right now, to be female, to be woman, kind of a hot commodity. It's why you're talking about it. How do you attract them? How do you, you know, we have more, at least in my experience, job opportunity than maybe we had in the past, especially women of color. We also still have more barriers than other women. But yeah, I mean, I don't know that it's a trend. We've always been badass. People are starting to see that we're badass, but there's still work to do.
When you spoke of the feminine energy at the table, I mean, that the collaboration you spoke of, the team building, trust building, mentorship, that's a theme that obviously has come up from a standpoint of the cultural pluses of having women in leadership roles in organizations and creating that, again, kind of supportive and empowering environment. So you spoke of challenges. There are many. So what are the challenges that, maybe we'll start personally, you've had to overcome? And again, I know a woman of color, so that's first place to start in the South for sure.
But probably given there.
Yeah.
But I honestly, Tim, I don't know a woman without a story.
Correct.
In which she has been patronized, overspoken, sexually harassed, whatever it is. Yeah. And I think that the main headwind really has nothing to do with the workplace. I think it's the effects of pure socialization. I mean, even women themselves, we have biases against each other, right? For example, I was listening to something recently where this incredibly talented woman who speaks about women empowerment was watching a female leader who had a high-pitched voice. And she started to think to herself, oh, she's not really that smart because it's just the tone of her voice, right? So we all are kind of seeing women in a certain lens. Women are more likely, when they accomplish things, will say, oh, I had a great mentor. It's because of the team, which is true. But a man will say, yeah, I mean, I did that, you know? Yeah. So there's some of the headwind is ourselves, our own self-talk, our own imposter syndrome. And then others is just how we as individuals perceive and interact with women. I mean, it's very hard work to change the workplace without really making an impact and creating experiences for our people. Because at the end of the day, it's people who make policy. It's people who make decisions. It's people who are running these organizations.
Yeah, the businesses, the people. When you think about building a culture that is supportive, inclusive of women leaders, what are some of the key things you believe need to be present in that business to make that a successful place for women leaders?
In my humble opinion, and especially this is probably indicative of any minority group, but I think companies need to not just put their money where their mouth is, but put their time where their mouth is. I know this is something you do well. I see you be the only in the room quite a bit, especially at the CAAFP. But I think that organizations need to be spending time within these communities. We often hear, oh, well, they're just not there. But that's not true. You have to go to where they
are.
You
gotta go to where the people are.
Exactly.
They're not coming to you.
And not just learn. I mean, the best part about that is not hearing from the horse's mouth how they feel or, you know, what unique opportunities or obstacles they may have. Sure, that's a part of it. But I think the biggest part of it is just embracing the culture. If you're going to ask me to come work at your company, you better be able to tell me what you're doing for diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. You got to know that I'm on LinkedIn and I'm reaching out to people who I culturally identify with, asking what their experience has been like. So I think communications around that is very important. And ultimately, women just, they want a human first, authentic leader. They want to know that whoever is sitting in front of them is who they are, whether we have something in common or not, because, you know, you just kind of want to know what you're dealing with.
So being in the room and showing up where the people are that you're trying to connect with. The authenticity, another theme that comes up a lot on this topic of just showing up as to genuinely who you are versus some facade.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Authenticity is a very, you know, prominent word or statement within this space. Traditionally, I think it meant being able to show up with your hair in its natural state or not cover your tattoos. And now it's expanding into something so much bigger. And I think it relates to what we're talking about. You know, to be a female in a predominantly male industry or just a female in the world, this whole idea of authenticity or being uncomfortable with the uncomfortable, that's not an opportunity for an experience. That's a skill. If you are a woman or a minority and you have done well in your career, you have a skill that cannot be matched. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes the power of that is overlooked.
Yeah. Let's spend a little time on that, Kristen. What is the skill that one must develop?
It's a pain in the butt, right? People, again, this call to be authentic. We're telling people you don't have to code switch.
Yeah.
It's kind of a skill. As a woman of color, I want to know, and at this point in my career, I am who I am. I'm gonna wear the big hoops. I'm gonna talk the way I talk. It could be in the board meeting. It can be wherever it is. But you have to work up to that, right? Mm-hmm. But I also know how to switch it. I know how to read the room. And this is not pervasive. I know that men do too, right? But we are quite literally living in a world that has socialized us to think less of ourselves, to not show confidence, or at least we're tapering the way that we show it because we don't want to be perceived as this or that. So there's like a finesse in this, mm-hmm. you know, femininity, again, meaning something different to everyone else. However, I think as I say this out loud, I'm like, please don't cancel me. But like, I think the one commonality is you can shapeshift. And I say, use it to your advantage. Don't let it burn you out. Don't let it hide your magic. But that is a skill that is learned and we're born in it.
Shapeshifting.
Mm-hmm.
Just adapting to your environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So switching gears a little bit, I am curious in your experience and from your perspective, what can male leaders do to be more facilitative of success of the female leaders in their organizations?
Yeah. First, I think it's important to note, I just hosted a retreat for women in Phoenix. These are all female firm owners, 30 women. One of the things that came up often was this topic. And a couple of things. We're raising sons. We have fathers and brothers. It's not like you have to lose something in order for a woman to gain something, right? In fact, data shows men live longer, they're happier, healthier, intimacy, everything in life is much better when women are
in the equation.
Exactly. And it's more equitable.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is a new concept, allyship and mentorship. I think that sometimes there's a little bit of a misconception. A mentor can be anybody, I think. They don't have to be at your company.
Mm-hmm.
A sponsor is someone who is at your company, who does have a seat at the table. And that sponsor becomes an ally when they use their voice to pull mm-hmm. you in, to give you opportunity, to give you visibility, to speak up for you when you're not in the room. And I think that takes intentionality. Sometimes we may think we're doing the right things, right? And I'm sure most of us are. Most of us mean well. But we have to think outside of ourselves. We have to have a conviction for this or it will fall by the wayside, just like everything else.
Mm-hmm. So to that end, I mean, obviously mentorship is one component, but sponsorship, let's spend a little more time on that because I am very familiar with that concept. I'm actually acting in that capacity right now for a couple people.
That's great.
It is. And in building a culture that is really supportive of women leaders, sponsorship can play a great role. So let's, for those that might not know what that concept is, because it's a, I don't know, that's a relatively new concept. Why don't you take a little bit of time to delve into the mechanics of that?
Sure. I think the best way to answer this is to just kind of tell my own story.
That's what I was hoping you would do.
Well, great. Sponsorship has played a big part of my career success. 3, even 4 years ago now, you know, 2020 is like really messed the time scale up, but
it's definitely thrown it off.
Yeah. If you would have asked me, would I be in the position that I'm in now? Less about the title, less about money or the typical ways we would describe success, more so about feeling like I'm in alignment or mm-hmm. with the growth of an organization. I mean, I could have never have guessed this. And the reason that it's happened for me is that I've had allies, sponsors in my life open the door. When I first started at this company, my first ally was the person that I networked with. He made sure, from a financial perspective, that things were very well taken care of. But he believed in me. He opened the door and one, it began to build my confidence. Two, it began to build my network. And I had opportunities to do that at the organizations where, you know, some of the men who were part of that Vistage group. But then I also just think about, you know, as you've read in my bio, I am sort of pseudo M&A. So I just hired somebody. Really excited about that in a time when DEIMB is what it is, when the world is what it is. But we did that so I could partner with our M&A team, right? I'm a sales girl at heart. And that's because our chief growth officer, Mike Sullivan, he has allowed me to sit in rooms where I had no idea what they were talking about. There was really no need for the head of DEIMB to be in that room. But because I expressed my interest, he opened the door for me, right? I've had my boss, our chief people officer, she gave me the opportunity to speak in front of a couple thousand people. I stepped off that stage and basically stepped into this role. I mean, people opening the door, I mean, that's all it really takes. Just the payoff for them is your success. So, you know, there's pressure on that. You got to come correct. But I think the crux of it, or maybe here's what the difference is. I've had male leaders and female leaders, counterparts in my life that I thought were mentors and that I thought were sponsors. But they were just really nice people that said nice things about me and made me feel confident. They didn't open the door. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're not even a part of my life anymore. You know what I mean? An ally is sort of always there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the key thing on sponsorship you hit on there, Kristen, is somebody that had a sincere, active interest in your success that gave you access to situations, people, opportunities that might not have been things you would have had access to previously for whatever reason, and then facilitated and made sure that those opportunities were presented to you. And they probably along the way gave you some coaching.
Oh, yeah.
On how to best show up in those different situations or as you pursued those opportunities. And that, I think that the notion of a sponsor, which again is something not a lot of people have heard of. I'd heard of it, didn't know what it was until I was asked to be one. Yeah, it's a big responsibility.
It is, and time commitment. And quite frankly, from a monetary perspective, nothing's in it for you. It's a selfless act of giving.
True. And I think that what's in it for the sponsor is to see someone that they have a belief in.
Oh, yes.
Succeed.
Yes. And just forgive me. I mean, from...
But yes, I mean,
like it's not, I guess I'm trying to
say,
it's
not a job.
It's not tokenism either, though, is what I'm saying. Because tokenism to me is like, if I'm being asked to take just my, you know, Black women recruits to lunch, that's tokenism. The company's benefiting from that. What am I getting from that? The beautiful thing about sponsorship, allyship is really the bulk of the benefit is on the person receiving that sponsorship.
Correct. Yeah, for sure. So you see that playing a more important role in.
Yes. And not just from men, from women too. I mean, women make great mentors because we've had them. And there's this, like, I call it the musical chairs effect. I've had great women leaders and I've had some where you feel like there's only one seat. So they're not as supportive. You know, this is a pretty common narrative that you hear. Even people, I've had peer-to-peer situations in a prior life or prior organization where we were building something together. And then when my house started to, you know, come up a little bit before hers, everything changed. And so I think we have to gut check ourselves too.
Relative to working with other women leaders that are, yes, that is an interesting dynamic you brought up earlier. So I'm curious, what do you see, Kristen, in successful working relationships where a woman leader is either mentoring or sponsoring or just encouraging another woman to grow and succeed as a woman leader in that organization?
I think it's the same dialogue.
Same dialogue.
Except if you are a woman in a position, you know, I am very blessed with the opportunity to do a lot of speaking and things like that. If you're a woman in a position where you have a lot of visibility, I think it's about saying, no, let's get some other women up here. Let's get some different perspective up here.
Inviting more people.
Exactly.
Into the opportunity. Yeah, I think that's huge because, again, sponsors putting you in the room, but another woman leader can be inviting more women leaders into
that's
the opportunity.
Right.
Okay. think it's helpful. I mean, I love the perspective you have of your professional life and how things have evolved. And I think it's specific to the series we're doing on women in leadership and building a healthy culture that supports them. It's super insightful. You made a comment about DEI and B kind of, you know, there's a little bit of a backlash maybe. Is that a fair assessment of what's going on right now?
In my financial planning life, everything had to be very PC. So let me just be direct here.
Yeah.
We're coming off of Roe v. Wade. We're coming off of affirmative action. We're seeing everything in Florida, Texas, I think Mississippi too, right? Banning federal funding for DEIB. No matter which side that you sit on, there's this heavy chest feeling that we all get one way or the other when we talk about DEIB. So we're in this time, especially with it being an election year, where we have to work to lower resistance. I think people have a lot of misconceptions. I was in the Bahamas recently, and someone came up to me not knowing what I do for a living and said, DEIB is the death of the world. And I'm like, oh.
Did you punch him?
I had a couple drinks by the end. Yeah, I was like, you know, what's interesting. But, you know, his thought was that it's all about hiring people who are not qualified just because of, you know, the culture that they come from. So I think it's just an interesting time where we have to work very hard to undercomplicate things. I feel a little cliche saying this, but we are so much more alike than we are different. So yeah, DEIB right now, it certainly gives me a little bit of a heavy chest, but I am reminded why I do this.
So let's focus on that, because I think that's where I want to go with the conversation is, what do you see from the role that you're in? And it sounds like this started as a result of speaking engagement, the opportunity with One Digital. Where do you see the impact in business happening with an intentional focus?
The business case is undeniable. Mm-hmm. It's almost like quantifying something that should be common sense when you have diverse perspective around the table, right? Think business is better. Retention is better. You bring, like, everything's just better. But unfortunately, I see a lot of organizations taking their foot off the gas. Again, not one of those. But that's something that I get questioned about often. And I think it's because of this, you know, sort of this heat, mm-hmm. this heavy chest that I'm talking about. People are afraid of taking a stand. Or I say that out of one side of my mouth, but on the other, I feel like it's not really taking a stand. It's doing what's right for
them. Yeah, and that's, I think, the key thing is when you look at it from your lens, putting aside, you know, to your point, the polarization of our society and everybody being broken into camps, how would you define kind of the main focus of your role? What are you trying to accomplish?
My role, I say, is to make sure that all of our people are empowered with all the tools and resources they need to be able to do their best work and live their best life. And so it's to make sure that the workplace is showing up the same for everyone, from a moral capacity, mm-hmm. but also from a business perspective. I mean, we see time and time again, our feet being held to the power. People want to know what our leadership looks like. People want to know what our plan is. You know, we published an annual report last year. One of the things we found was hairy and scary. We saw that our Black colleagues were underpaid by 15% to their white counterparts. This year, we got the gap down to 4%. But I think organizations that are really moving the needle are mm-hmm. those ones that are showing up transparent. They're showing the good, the bad, and the ugly. To me, it's about the journey. It's not about mm-hmm. getting there, which, by the way, I don't think there's such thing as getting there. I mean, there's always going to be something.
Somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I think for me, it's simple. It's just making sure we all have the same opportunity to do their best work and live our best life.
I love that. And I think that is great, because I think part of the challenge right now is, and to your point, people hear the term, they associate it with whatever they've come up with, or they've heard someone else without thinking it through or investigating it or researching it from a reliable source.
Yeah.
But it's really about people.
It is.
It's really about embracing people. So organizations that do this well, what do they have in common, or what are some of the key things that they do?
Number one, they are overusing the word here, but they're authentic. And this is mm-hmm. what I mean. Plug you again here. Like, you spend time sitting in the room. You spend time building community. I say, you know, there's three C's in my mind: community, curiosity, and conviction. This work mm-hmm. is hard. If you don't have some type of personal affiliation, It's real easy to under-prioritize DEI and B. Mm-hmm. Community, it's the one space I don't feel competitive in. If one company is doing great in DEI and B, better than us, you know, from, I mean, maybe some of that is relative, but great. This is the one space where it takes a village. And then curiosity, I feel like that's the anecdote to resistance. People aren't afraid of change, I don't think, but I think they are afraid of losing something. Mm-hmm. So to get this right means you're really communicating this well, educating your people. I mean, there's so many facets that go into this, both on the people side and the business side. It's really just about putting one foot forward in front of the other, you know, mm-hmm. not being afraid to make a stand. And when you step in it, you just admit it. You try to build a culture of grace and you do the best you can.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the putting it to practical steps, I think, is the challenge so many businesses have today. Because again, there's this whole narrative and people get lost in that and they lose sight of these are human beings showing up to work every day.
Right.
And everybody, I mean, again, the diversification of the workforce is real, whether it's intentional or not.
Right.
And I think that embracing who people are as they show up and helping them have their best life and then helping them do the best that they can do in the work that they do is really powerful. We've talked about authenticity a little bit. That's come up in other episodes we've done on this topic. So it's a real theme. What does that mean to you? Hmm. How do you define authenticity, Kristen?
Well, about 3 years ago, I would have said it means, as I mentioned earlier, that I'm going to wear my hair curly. My husband's not going to cover his tattoos. No one has to hide their accent. You can love who you love openly. But that is very surface level. As I've been upon my journey more so as an individual than as someone mm-hmm. working in this space, I think authenticity is about being, well, it's about tapping into the deepest parts of yourself, being so in tune with your purpose, which I believe everyone has the same one. It's to serve people. The real question is not why, but how. So tapping into those unique gifts and talents that you have and making sure that you are being true to those. Because when you can't be, when you don't have belief in yourself, if you have belief in the gifts that you've been given and the purpose that, you know, you or how you live out your purpose with those gifts, that's what being authentic is. And the onus is on us to create workplaces where people feel free to do that.
So that's a great topic because that's like a whole nother series I have planned for later this year on purpose. So you open the door. What do you see about organizations that embrace that idea? How do they do that well?
How do they do it? Well, I was going to say they're bigger, better, stronger.
Absolutely. But how do they do that well?
They are human first, people first leaders, and it's all under the precipice of psychological safety. You know, Google did a study. Everybody's probably familiar, right? Mm-hmm. Psychological safety, number one factor for high-performing teams. And I think it's kind of got a bad rap right now. It sounds fluffy, sounds like it means everybody gets a trophy or all of our ideas get taken. But really, it means that we're going to build a culture of challengers, a culture of curiosity. And there's this other misconception that when everybody gets along and you have a good culture, that it naturally exists. But that is not true either. And so I think this, and I'm, you know, high level here, the very, very starting point is creating organizations where people can have the type of conflict that moves things forward, where they can, you know, say, hey, I think I really could have added value to this meeting. Why didn't you invite me? I think it's where they can really live their authentic self.
It's having the conversations that they may have in their mind or as we say, the meeting after the meeting.
Yeah.
Having that conversation in the moment.
That's exactly right.
And the psychological safety, yes, it does not mean everybody gets a trophy. But it does mean that people are not fearful of retribution to say what they actually are experiencing or their perspective. And I know firsthand, we have spent a lot of time trying to foster that on our team. And I feel like we've done a reasonably good job of that. That achieves much better outcomes.
Absolutely. And it allows people to walk in their purpose.
Yep. And people feel more respected. They feel heard. they feel valued. And I think those are all the key things to any healthy culture in an organization, whether it's men, women, white, black, you know.
That's right.
It's human beings. And I think that's the core. The other thing that I want to touch on is a people first approach is human beings for who they are, not in these categories that our society seems to like to throw us all into to divide us and conquer us, or attempt to at least. So kind of back to women in leadership, are there a few things to somebody that's listening to this podcast that's a business owner that, you know, might not have a organization that's necessarily embraced women in leadership? What are a couple of the simple things they can start to do?
Number one, starts with you. All things do. Mm-hmm. Widen your own lens. Find opportunities to be the only in the room. Maybe it's a women's conference. I don't know. Whatever it is, start doing a lot more of that. And I have to imagine that there are women at everyone's organization, maybe not at the, you know, executive level. Sit them at the table. Just sit mm-hmm. them at the table, just like my sponsor did for me. I was in rooms I had no business being in, learning. And then once I felt, you know, like it was appropriate and I felt confident enough, I would inspire the room to think about things differently. And so I think you start with the women that you have in your own organization. Be honest with yourself about your blind spots. When you are seeing things happen, you know, we often talk about you call it out in the moment, but sometimes, like, think about it like this. When you hear a man say something, it's like a man's joke, right? Like, how would you have perceived that if it was a woman? What would you think about her? And then kind of vice versa too. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like, I do this with anything minority, but I was chatting with a group and this woman worked at a country club, and we think finances, for that, like, they have a lot of, this is a service industry and it, you know, it looks a certain way, but someone had said something about the LGBTQIA+ community, like a derogatory joke. She is of this community. They didn't know that. And she's like, I just didn't feel like it was appropriate to say anything. I said, well, what if they would have said the same thing about Black people? And she said, oh my God, I would have said something. So sometimes I think it's like inserting other things into the lens and allowing yourself to get outside of your jar so you can see the label.
Yep. I like that term. That's a good term. So as you're working, I know you speak all over the country and you've been traveling a lot, following you on LinkedIn, keeping up with you or trying to keep up with you. What are you excited about as you kind of look out over the next 6 to 9 months of this year?
Oh my gosh. So I call it the Chitlin Circuit. Back in the day.
Chitlin Circuit.
Back in the day, Motown singers, Black artists, they'd be on the Chitlin Circuit. But I'm on that right now. Our company does something called Transform and Engage. So we just, all the things that you and I are talking about, mm-hmm. high-performing teams, people first, DEIB, mental health, well-being, just pouring, you know, into the people that we serve around that aspect. So I love doing that. So I'll be speaking at our board again. I'm speaking there. I mean, I just feel like I'm literally living the dream. I had this dream, speaking of, that I lost my job and I woke up gasping for air. It was like those dreams you have when your spouse cheats on you or something. Never in 110 years did I think I could feel that way about the work that I'm doing. So Tim, I'm excited about all of it.
The list is long.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you being here with us today very much, and always love spending time with you and hearing your perspective, and I'm super excited to see the work you're doing in your new role. And making a difference and spreading the message and sharing your passion. And to your point about it takes a village, it's one person at a time, and you can't let the noise get in the way. You gotta keep shining the light in the darkness, and you're doing a great job of that. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And so are you. It's just a pleasure to be on this podcast.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Winning Through Culture.
Until next time, stay intentional, be impactful.
Because your culture matters.